Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called, Can You Really Make a Major Life Change at 50, 60, 70, or Beyond? Making a life change at any age can be risky, but for Fred Mandel, it was the only way. Although he had a great career, making tons of money as a financial executive, he always felt like something was missing. So when he was in his 50s, he decided life was too short not to give his dream a try. By taking little risks towards a bigger goal, he was able to quit his job and make a decent living as an artist, and he's never looked back. But Fred says his story isn't unique, and he didn't stop there. He set out to interview as many people as he could who had made similar major life changes. He analyzed what they all had in common and examined how they all did it. And in this audio interview, you'll hear the roadmap for life change that resulted from his interviews and the book that he wrote about it titled Becoming a Life Artist, The 7 Creative Skills You Need to Reinvent Yourself at Any Stage of Life. You'll also hear the 4 basic questions you should ask yourself that will help you determine if a life change is right for you. You'll hear the 1 largest obstacle most people face when making a life change and 3 ways to overcome it. You'll hear how to build a recovery plan for your goals so you have something in place for renewing your energy and focus even when your motivation drops. You'll also hear the almost magical power that having a sacred mantra creates, how to use it effectively, and the one Fred uses for his success. You'll hear 7 different examples of the kinds of everyday activities that could help you subconsciously tap into your creative insight. You'll also hear clear and straightforward advice for pursuing your life's calling if you've lost your job or are struggling in this economy. You'll also hear real-life examples of how to lessen the risk of major life change by breaking your large goals into little doable chunks. Life only comes around once. If you're not happy with your current situation, it's never too late to reinvent yourself, no matter what stage of life you're in. And in this audio interview, you'll be walked through the process so you can see it's not as scary as you probably think. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Sinoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So today we are talking with Fred Mandel, a consultant, artist, and creative catalyst, along with Kathleen Jordan, author of Becoming a Life Change Artist, 7 Creative Skills That Can Transform Your Life. Fred, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
So how did Becoming a Life Change Artist come about?
I had a 2-plus decade career in financial services as an executive. And in my mid-50s, I began to feel stuff roiling around inside of me, things that I wanted to explore, but I didn't really have the opportunity to explore. So on a whim, I enrolled in a sculpture workshop. I had never taken an art class since the 7th grade, but I wanted to use my hands and my imagination in a very different way. So I dove into it. I had some wonderful teachers, instructors. They challenged me. They taught me. And I was really amazed at the kind of ways I could learn to express myself and give form to different ideas. And in a relatively short period of time, I was encouraged to start entering pieces and shows and then to have my one-man show. And lo and behold, people actually started buying my stuff. So that was a wonderful surprise and very encouraging. And I stepped away from the corporate world to pursue my artwork in a much more serious way. During that time of stepping away, I became curious about other people who were going through significant changes. And I began to interview them in an informal way. And I really began to discover that there were a lot of different stories out there. They were very rich. And I began to realize that, you know, there's a bigger story here. At that point, I was introduced to the woman who became my business partner and co-author, Kathy, and together we ended up interviewing over 100 people who had gone through significant life change. At the same time, I had really dived into studying the great artists, their creative process, their work, their life, and so forth, and I ended up finding that there were some really, really surprising and interesting parallels between individuals who navigate change in their life, and the great artists who navigate the creative process in their artwork.
Fred, I love that. You said it at mid-50s. I've had this life change experience. You know, a lot of people mid-50s, they're either, you know, looking at, okay, how many more years to retirement? Or they're looking at, you know, gee, I hate my job, but I can't change. And so, you know, that's great to hear. There's still a lot of hope for people 50 and over.
Absolutely. In fact, many, many of the stories that I relate in the book are of people who are in their 50s and 60s. It's really interesting and remarkable and inspiring the way people make choices and undertake courageous steps to really reinvent themselves later in life. It's really wonderful.
Right. And Fred, I want to ask you, because this is a really timely topic, considering where we're at as a country with a lot of people struggling, a lot of people, you know, just feeling a little bit lost and needing direction. But one of the things that caught our eye in your introduction for becoming a life change artist, you've got a list of people. Now, are these real people that you worked with? A neurosurgeon is forced to leave his profession because of a heart condition and finds a new passion. A single mother on welfare becomes a physician. A Hollywood entertainer becomes a rabbi at age 58. Are these real?
These are very, very real folks. In fact, the rabbi who was a Hollywood entertainer is in probably not too far from your neck of the woods. In fact, I interviewed a Jesuit priest who ended up entering the theater. So interviewed people all over the country, all different age groups, all different circumstances. In some cases, they made these changes by choice. And in other cases, the rug had been pulled from under them. And they decided they had no choice but to make some changes.
You talked about people making changes because they have to. You know, I have a friend that works in a bank. He's very unhappy, head of household, doesn't know what he's going to do, doesn't feel he has the freedom to change. What do you do with people like that?
You raise an interesting point, because I really think that, and this is based upon the interviews that I've done, I really think that the greatest obstacle in an individual making changes is himself or herself. There are opportunities out there. There are new ways of looking at ourselves and uncovering interesting possibilities. But what ends up happening is we either get stuck or we tamp down these feelings of attention that are in our lives. And I think if we begin to pay attention to those and look for fellow travelers, look for other resources outside of ourselves we can bounce some ideas off of, then I think it can open up some opportunities that you didn't think are there. You raise a great point, because the single biggest obstacle in making changes tends to be ourselves.
So how do you get around that? What are some steps people can take?
Well, I think that there are professional resources that you can go to. I just want to mention them quickly, because there are other things I think you can do on your own. But there's a whole new profession out there called life coaches, and these are individuals who are very practiced and experienced in facilitating a process where people can make changes in their life. So that is a resource that is certainly available to you. But, you know, one of the things that I learned in diving into the artists' lives and looking at the skills that they developed over time was that they developed a set of skills that enabled them to be objective about their creative process. So they developed the skill of seeing, and they employed a number of different strategies in terms of how to look at things in new and fresh ways. One of those strategies, I call it stepping back from the canvas. We might laugh from time to time because you have this classical image of the artist who's in a studio and is up close and personal with his canvas and his paint and his brush and working away. And every once in a while, he or she will step back from the canvas, maybe 10 or 12 feet. And there's a good reason for that, because it freshens the eye. It gives you a brand new perspective on the painting that you've been working on so closely. And only when you gain that perspective can you see if the painting is working, if the color combinations are working, if the design is working, and so forth. We can take that skill of stepping back from the canvas and apply it to our own lives. We can step back from the canvas of our own lives and kind of separate ourselves from the hectic day-to-day routines and demands in our life. So what I encourage people to do is to steal, if you will, a few hours in a morning or an afternoon and go to a favorite peaceful spot. It could be for a walk in the woods. It could be to a park. It could be near the water. It could be up in the hills. It really doesn't matter. And bring a notebook or a sketch pad or a journal with you. And when you do that, begin to ask what I think are very simple but compelling questions. They may lead to complex answers, but ask yourself questions like, what do I really want to do with my life? And listen to yourself. Don't be afraid of things that might come to the surface that are not especially comfortable. You might ask yourself, how do I really want to be in the world? And am I being that way right now? And if not, how can I get more aligned with that? Are there things inside of me that I want to get out that I'm not paying attention to? And if I give it the opportunity, they may lead me to develop new parts of myself. These are really basic questions, but if you listen to your answers, and you don't have to come up with answers right away, but listen to your body, listen to your imagination, listen to your mind, new things begin to bubble up. And over time, you'll arrive at some answers that require your attention.
In becoming a life change artist, Fred, you and Kathleen came up with the 7 really important things that creative minds in history share. And I think it's really important that we talk about some of those things. You just mentioned seeing. What are some of the other ones?
In terms of how we arrived at them, we really dove into the great artists and their creative process. And we tried to ask ourselves, what was it that accounted for their creative output? You know, the first answer might be, well, these were geniuses or these were very talented people. But there have been geniuses in history that never rose to the level of being a master. So there must have been other attributes that they had, aside from talent, which catapulted them to creative success. And what we found was that there are these 7 core creative skills. Now, what was also interesting is that when we interviewed over 100 people for the book, we discovered that the skills that enabled them to navigate change in their life mirrored the same skills that the great masters of art had, because life change is a fundamentally creative process. So what are those skills? We've mentioned seeing, which basically means looking at things with a fresh perspective and the ability to make new connections. That's one. And I gave you an example of stepping back from the canvas. Another one is what we call preparation. And what we learned there is really fascinating, because modern science is just now catching up with the great artists. Modern science is demonstrating that if we engage in certain preparation practices or routines, we can predispose the mind to creative insight. The artists used to do it on a regular basis without the science, and now we're learning through science that, in fact, it works. What are some of those practices? Some of them might be yoga or meditation or listening to music such as Mozart or Bach or your favorite music. But some of them are actually kind of everyday things. Going for a walk in the woods, taking a nice bicycle ride, washing the dishes, taking a shower. In the workshops that I do, I like to ask people, where were you when you last had a creative insight? And invariably, the answers are, I was not at work. I was going for a walk. I was taking a shower. I was playing golf. I was taking a long ride in the car. You have all of these other kinds of activities which trigger creativity, but it appears that where we work is not the most conducive environment for creative insight. So preparation is another one. A third creative skill is using context. And what we mean by that is that we all live in many different contexts. We live in the context of our personal history. We live in the context of our social and cultural environment. We live in the context of our political environment, and on and on and on, our professional environment. And the important thing here that the great masters teach us is that we need to understand the trends in each of our contexts and in the context we are thinking of entering in order to make wise life decisions. So being aware of the broader context beyond simply ourselves becomes important.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. These days, that's pretty easy to do, too. You know, I was noticing on Google Insight, you can search any topic, and you can find out what people are looking at. And, you know, there's such a wealth of information out there now to help you pinpoint what is popular and interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, the sources of information are huge, and what we have to learn is how to discern good knowledge from just information that's out there. And when we tap into that good knowledge, it lets us describe the context to ourselves in a way that'll be very helpful.
Fred, another thing you talk about with these 7 important competencies are embracing uncertainty and taking risks. And that caught my eye, especially. I've done that my whole life. But is there a point where that is too much? Because I'm starting now nearing 50 and going, you know, I'd like an office job.
I think they work together, these two. And as you referenced earlier in the conversation, that we're living during unprecedented times in terms of change. Whether it's the crazy economy or this new technology that's introducing change or global competition, people are feeling less in control of their lives. And it presents itself in the form of uncertainty. As a result of that, people can kind of shut down. They could say to themselves, well, it's just too overwhelming for me, and I am not even going to begin to think about what kind of changes I want to make. On the other hand, what we learn from the great masters is that when you embrace this uncertainty, as a source of creative insight, and you are willing to begin to step into a process of exploration and discovery, which in itself is a risk. Because when you step into exploration and discovery, you're stepping into the unknown. So, you know, to be very concrete, a person might say, well, I am doing this kind of work. I don't want to do this work anymore. I'm not sure what I want to do, but I just don't even know where to begin. So I think that there are opportunities for people to explore alternatives. It may involve taking a workshop or reading some things that they haven't read before or having conversations with people in other fields. That is a non-risky step, but it is still stepping into the unknown because you're moving in a direction of things that you're not familiar with. And when you embrace that journey, it really surfaces information that is going to help you make good decisions. Now, the risky part of it, and this was really interesting, when I interviewed all these people, my jaw fell to the ground because some of them made such big, big changes, I would say it wasn't as risky. And their response was, well, when you look back, yes, it might appear to be risky, but what we did was we made the big risks bite-sizable. We chunked them down and took small steps in the beginning, small risks. And once we did that and were able to come out in a good spot, that developed our confidence. We took another small risk and another small risk. And now I look back and I say, wow, did I really do that? So we tend to awfulize risk. We think that, well, if I make a change, I'm going to make less money, or, gee, can I really do that kind of work? Well, you don't have to make that commitment and decision all at once. There is an opportunity to break it down into smaller learning steps.
And Fred, have you seen people do both ways, where they take tremendous risk all at once and then the smaller step process? Have you witnessed that in your travels?
The answer is yes, but most of the time people don't leap off the cliff. You know, sometimes people are not given a choice because the rug gets pulled out from under them. They may have a job and they get terminated for reasons beyond their control, and they've got to do something different. They have to do it relatively quickly. But even there, I encourage people that while you may need to put yourself in a position where you can generate revenues for yourself and your family, there's a lesson here. And how do you combine taking care of yourself in a practical way with more long-term thinking about how to call up what is best in you and what your talents are over a longer period of time? So just because you land back on your feet to get a secure job, it doesn't mean that's the best situation for you over the long term.
So you've got to do that step of preparation and seeing and kind of trying to figure out really where your passion lies.
Yes, all of these skills kind of work together. And we have found that when a person develops and uses the full portfolio of skills, that's where all the pistons are running on the engine.
And Fred, you have a couple more key competencies there on that list, but I also want to talk with you. I know you do workshops around the country. Share with our listeners a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I do workshops. I work with a couple of other people to do these, but it's taking the concepts and principles and tools in the book and creating a powerful experience for people. The workshops can either be a day or a 2.5-day workshop. We call them the Life Change Studio, because the studio is a place where people can come. It's a safe place. You can experiment. You can share and exchange ideas. And you end up really discovering new possibilities and building relationships with fellow travelers. And we do that, as I said, around the country, and we'll continue to do that because they are very, very powerful experiences, both for myself and my co-facilitators and for the people who are experiencing it. But I also work with organizations and organizational leaders in developing the creative capabilities of leaders and their teams in for-profit and non-for-profit organizations. So I get a lot of satisfaction out of that because it's taking all of this material from the book and bringing it into the workplace and helping people improve their performance. So that's another thing I do. And then I spend my time painting and writing and speaking.
Great. And how about a website or a phone number that people can get more information on the Life Change Studio workshop?
It's fredmandel.com.
FredMandel.com, and that's with two L's, right?
Yes.
Now, the other things that creative minds in history share is the sense of collaborating, and the last one, which we all need to work with probably, applying discipline. Let's talk about those.
Well, the collaboration one came as a complete surprise to me, because when we think of the great artists, we think of them alone in their studio, laboring away, trying to create masterpieces. You know, they are these isolated geniuses. But what I learned when I dove into their lives and their work was that, in fact, they were tremendous collaborators. They worked and actively sought out relationships with other artists who could help them look at their work, critique their work. In fact, Picasso worked with a French artist by the name of Georges Braque. And as they say in his biography, Braque would often put paintbrushes on Picasso's work, and Picasso would put paintbrush strokes on Braque's work. So they really worked together very tightly, and together they created the art movement called Cubism, which was the beginning of modern art. So unless these artists had not collaborated, we wouldn't have had modern art as we know it. So what I've learned in also interviewing real live life changer artists is that navigating change can be a challenging experience, and it's very difficult to go it alone. So if you could find individuals who you connect with who are fellow travelers who are also going through change, there are resources in the community. As I mentioned earlier, there are life coaches. These relationships can help you exchange ideas, give you feedback, hold you accountable for things that you say you're going to do, and so forth. So that whole collaborative relationship becomes very, very important in supporting the transition and life change process. Now we come to applying discipline, because we know that major life change, even small changes, often require heavy lifting. They're not easy to do. And it's not unusual that sometimes motivation takes a walk. It just goes out the door and we just feel flat and we're not able to continue to do the kinds of things we need to do in order to move ahead. And that's why discipline becomes so, so important. Now, an element of discipline, which people often don't talk about, is this dynamic of resilience. Resilience is sort of a bounce back ability where you fall off the horse, you get back on it. So one of the things that I encourage people to do at the beginning of their process is to build in what I call a recovery plan, where they will find ways to renew their energy, which then allows them to continuously apply discipline even when motivation has taken a walk. One of the things that modern research is showing us is that we can actually imprint new pathways on our brain. And those new pathways enable us to develop new habits. If we couldn't develop new habits, we wouldn't be able to change. We couldn't shed our old habits. And the science shows that the key dynamic in enabling us to imprint new neural pathways is what they call attentional focus, where we really focus our attention on the tasks that we need to do in order to make the changes we want to make. And when we do that, it's not simply a matter of, on the surface, shifting behaviors, but it's a matter of imprinting these new behaviors in our brain, neural pathways, so that they become new habits.
And how do people increase that attentional focus?
They do it in a conscious way so that they think about what it is they want to do. They have a vision of where they want to go, and they literally envision it. They visualize it on an intense period of time each day, and over time, that will imprint itself on your brain. I created a sacred mantra, creative mantra. Every morning when I get up, I ask myself, how am I going to live my creative mantra? And every night before going to bed, I ask myself in concrete ways, how have you lived your creative mantra? So I am continuously reminding myself, and when things come my way, opportunities, I always run it through the filter of my creative mantra, and they will enable me to live my mantra. Now, my mantra is create, integrate, make a difference. Those are the things that energize me, that motivate me, that keep me true to myself in this world. And if every day I cannot demonstrate to myself that I am living my creative mantra, then I need to make adjustments. I put the creative mantra on my website. I have it on my business cards. Whenever I give a business card out to somebody, I will say to them, if you want to contact me, here's the information on my coordinates. But if you flip the card over, I will say, but if you really want to know what I am all about, this is what I'm all about. Create, integrate, make a difference. So that's an example of how people can develop a attentional focus. They can develop their own creative mantra to do that.
Well, Fred, that is just a great amount of information and really helpful. And thank you so much, Fred.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to chat.
Oh, I do too. That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
That's the end of our interview with Fred Mandel. I hope you found it helpful and it encourages you to make your life change starting today. For more great interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.